Good morning again. It is so lovely to be able to have this time to sit together. And again, just a welcome for anyone who joined us after the initial introductions. It's just such a pleasure, as always, to have this time with you all. And today will mark, well, it's the temporary end of this journey we've been on since January through the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. And this last piece on the path in the third basket, as it were, if just as a quick review for those of you who haven't been here since January, the Four Noble Truths, the first teachings of the Buddha saying in this human realm, there's suffering. The word dukkha, that there's dukkha, can be variously translated as stress, dissatisfaction. A wonky wheel on what is now the shopping cart, on what was then the ox cart, that there are causes to the suffering, the degree to which we cling and also push away. It's possible to end this or to reduce it, to slow down the suffering. It is possible to end it. And he says, this is how. And the fourth noble truth is this eightfold path. And it's not a linear A to B. It's just, again, from one of Ajahn Sumedho's teachings, he likens it to this eight-legged animal upon which we can rest. At these different parts of the Eightfold Path, as we can relax into them, wise understanding, wise view. That's sort of the first basket. The second basket of action, our wise speech, literally our wise action and livelihood, how we move in the world. And then these last three that are pointing more to the basket of the heart, the orientation around wise effort, wise mindfulness, and today, wise concentration. And concentration for me has always been challenging, a little bit of a version of like, ooh, it's going to be so hard. This focus, I don't know whether it's from, as a kid being told you have to concentrate, or whether it's wounds of some sort from law school and having to concentrate, but it has it even as my body can feel it, it's like this way of having to concentrate that can feel not easeful. And what I love about Sumedho's, as he just talks about in this book about this idea of the Budo, is he's really offering something that's so simple. And in the book, as I mentioned in the instructions, it's not about annihilating other thoughts. It's just try focusing on this, allowing that to be in the rhythm with the breath and giving the mind the job of Budo, and see what happens. That over time, and this is definitely something to check out, not to believe me, but see if it's true in your experience, to see that the chatter, the story that wants to be told about what someone did or what's happening or the scoring or whatever, it lessens because the main stage, as it were, is being given to this naming Budo. And again, what I really appreciate about the way Sumedho talks about this is it's a real encouragement to brighten the mind, that it's not heavy and I can concentrate. It's more, oh, we have this amazing human that lived 2,600 years ago, and we can invoke his image as a means of inspiration that it's possible in this realm to wake up. In this time, in this very lifetime, we can wake up. So, an invitation there to brighten the mind, the Bu, and then the exhale, Budo. And again, as a way of gathering the mind, it said, now, and this, I read this, and this was quite some time ago, so I'm sure it's worse. But the average human attention span now is about 6 seconds. For the goldfish, has 8 seconds. That this was definitely, I think it's worse now. It's definitely as the rise of the cell phone. Our attention has gone down of the constant distraction or the ping or the pull or the notification or whatever. And the suffering that comes from not having a mind that's unified. And suffering in the ways of there's a constant restlessness of a pull out. And it's not just about the phone. A talk that some of you know, Christina Feldman is one of my favorite teachers. She has a book called Boundless Heart that I use all the time. It's definitely on my desert island list of books to take. But she gave a talk on wise concentration, and I felt so appreciative of how she laid it out. So I'm absolutely blatantly stealing from her talk as a way of wanting to share what I felt was such a beautiful way of holding this practice of wise concentration. Tolan and I were speaking of it a little bit earlier. And for me, it has a very feminine quality because it is one, it's much like Samatha, it's a kind of gentling in to this notion of concentrating. And again, I have always loved the notion of really, as I understand it, as I practice with it, that concentration, it's really just how do we unify the mind instead of the mind being like that cartoon cat image, boop. It's just, oh, what if it's like this? And the practices with the metta phrases, may I be happy, may I be peaceful, may I be healthy, may I be free. That too is a concentration practice. And sometimes that's a lot of words to concentrate on. So while beautiful and skillful at times, sometimes this inhale, boo, do, there's not a lot there. It's two syllables. And it can be just a, as a reminder of just stay here. Of a way of bringing the mind together so there can be a place to rest in the form. The line I say quite a bit from Annie Lamont is, my mind is like a bad neighborhood. I try not to go there alone. And one of the ways to brighten up the neighborhood so it feels safe is to be a little bit more unified, a little bit more easeful, less distracted, less of that energy that's, that can be really jarring. And again, we're living in a time that the air we're breathing, whether it's in our own homes, maybe less so, maybe not, but out in the world is really jarring. Yes, we're opening up, vaccinated, not vaccinated. There's an anxiety that's out there of what does this mean? So the ways that the mind can have, has been, the body, the mind has been on kind of hyper alert of, is that person going to get me sick? That's activated. And in that activation of the nervous system, there can be a rising in the energy, a restlessness, and an anxiety. So it's like, okay, if the mind can stay collected, then there's a place of ease and rest. I'm going to go back and talk more about Christina's talk in a minute, but I wanted to share a little bit from what Samato wrote in this book, that this exercise, the Budo, or some, if that doesn't work, other concentration practice, it's a skillful use of thought. We're using this exercise, this wudo, as a way to sustain concentration for the length of one inhalation and exhalation. And I love this phrase that it's a skillful use of thought, because so much of the time we may not have a skillful use of thought. It's just kind of the mind can just run free and really cause all kinds of harm, self-harm, the stories that we tell, the agitation that we can create. There's a lot of pain that we can inflict upon ourselves, that second, third arrow, so to speak. And then when the mind is really unguarded and kind of let loose, we can also speak in ways that can be harmful, or how to kind of allow there to be a skillful use of thought, and even dropping that question periodically in the day or as we watch the mind thinking, is this a skillful use of thought? And even the idea of a choice. And I'd be more skillful in my thinking, in that when I spoke last week of the thought, the belief creates a thought creates the action, habit, character, fate. That's not quite what it is, but that line of what begins as a thought, as we spoke last week, of sort of you have the thought, oh, I'm going to get tea. I have the thought, I'm going to go to this. And before you know it, you're like up in an action. You really want to do that, to slow down when the mind is more unified. There's more space to watch a thought come in and be like, no. And let it go. He writes, the obstacle to concentration practice is aversion to failure and the incredible desire to succeed. Practice is not a matter of willpower, but of wisdom, of noting wisdom. With this practice, you can learn where your weaknesses are and where you get lost. You witness the kind of character traits you've developed in your life so far, not to be critical of them, but just to know how to work with them and not to be enslaved by them. This means a careful, wise reflection on the way things are. So rather than avoiding them at all costs, even the ugliest messes of the mind are observed and recognized. And there's an enduring quality. He goes on to say, Nibbana, the word Nibbana is translated as cooling, as used as like to Nibbana, the rice, to cool the rice. There's a significance of that word coolness. It tends to be refreshing, to not be caught up in the passions, but to be alert and balanced. With the word Budo, you can develop in your life as something to fill the mind with rather than worries and all kinds of unskillful habits. Take the word, look at it, listen to it. Budo. We're not using it as a club to annihilate or repress anything, but again, as a skillful means. We're not here to annihilate, but to allow things to fade out. It's a gentle practice of patiently imposing Budo over the thinking, not out of exasperation, but out of in a firm and deliberate, and I would add a discerning way of here, try this on. So the flip back to Christina's talk, as she was speaking of offering this notion of wise concentration, really, this is my word, sort of as a refuge, as a home base, as a way for us to be able to rest in, connect to, belong to ourselves, as opposed to where she has this line of rather than listening to the chorus of the hungry ghosts that are out there prowling, looking for something. And she talks about, we wake up in the morning and the mind can be like, either what's wrong or what do I have to do or how does my body feel or whatever, that it can be an immediate upon coming into consciousness that this image of the hungry ghost, which there's a beautiful image, I think, in one of the Japanese anime movies. I think it's Spirited Away, but I couldn't find it, of this round, huge round belly, a long neck, and then this tiny little mouth. And that's the realm of the hungry ghost, which is a Buddhist concept. And then Gorba Mate has a book called In the Realm of the Hungry Ghost. And I just wanted to share what he says about it. And does tremendous work in the realm of addiction. The inhabitants of the hungry ghost realm are depicted as creatures with scrawny necks, small mouths, emaciated limbs, large, bloated, empty bellies. This is the domain of addiction, where we constantly seek something outside ourselves to curb an insatiable yearning for relief or fulfillment. The aching emptiness is perpetual because the substances or objects or pursuits that we hope will soothe it are not really what we need. We don't know what we need. So as long as we stay in the hungry ghost realm, we'll never know. We haunt our lives without ever being fully present. Right. And I can definitely, I resonate so much of this way that we're always looking out to try and find something to satisfy when we're not actually clear. What am I actually trying to satisfy? And I think it's safe to say for a lot of us, we're trying to satisfy that need of belonging, of being able to belong to ourselves, to say, I'm okay. Flawed, yes. And okay, but there's a perpetuation in the dominant culture here in the States, at least, very much promotes, no, you're not. You're not pretty enough. You're not thin enough. You don't make enough money. You're not working hard enough. You didn't do well enough. I mean, all and on and on and on and on. Like, we know this. And to be able to begin to make choices, one, about where's the mind going, skillful use of thought or not, being able to open up to the idea of having there be a collection of the mind such that that chorus of the hungry ghost sangha is not what's dictating our motion, our literal motions, our movements. It's not dictating the thought patterns. They're not the ones driving the bus, as it were. We all of us have the inner committee. And I love this invocation of the hungry ghosts that are on our inner committee. And do we really want those guys to be in charge? And one of the ways to lessen their control, their impact, their volume, is to allow ourselves to practice with the idea of concentrating the mind. So we can just be like, okay, there's that noise out there. I don't have to listen to it as deeply. This is from Christina's talk, the quote, I don't know where the quote's from. In this perfect secluded place, this mountain hermitage, everything one does is good. And she equates this ability to find a space, a realm of concentration and of ease within our own mind as that mountain hermitage. A poem I often quote from Martha Postlewaite's, The Clearing. Can we create a clearing in the dense busyness of our lives? This too was an invitation to allow for a sense of concentration in the mind. Because in that, when we have moments, it's really to think about this practice as moment to moment, not as nibbana out there. One day I'll get enlightened, or one day I'll stop worrying. No, sweetheart, it's this moment right here. So we might have a moment where the mind feels still. So sweet, right? And to be able to start trusting the ability of our own capacity to still the mind, right? A remarkable gift of this practice, because in that place of stillness, we can rest. That's home base. Otherwise, when we're really at the behest of this chorus of hungry ghosts or chorus of inner voices that don't serve us, we really can be lost. And we're running either away from these voices that tell us what's wrong with us, or we're running towards something, hoping that when I get there, it'll be better. This is not to say discernment doesn't come in about how we make choices. It's just being able to have some reflection about what the motivation, where are the roots of what we're doing. And again, this notion of, or the distinction between when we're in a place of stillness, like, oh, okay, here, this moment, this breath in, this breath out, this heartbeat, this opening of the heart, this closing of the heart, in contrast to the mind that's always telling us you need to be better or prettier or faster, or in some ways something other than how you are. The fundamental way the minds can tell us you're not good enough, you're not good, or someone else isn't good enough, and the ways in which we can judge and criticize others that have us running in a different way, which can lead us often to a place of feeling lost and restless and disconnected and confused and frustrated. David Wagner's Lost. Stand still. The trees ahead and the bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is here. And you must treat it as a powerful stranger, must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen. It answers, I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again saying, here. No two trees are the same to raven, no two branches the same to wren. If what a tree or bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. Stand still. How often do we actually allow ourselves to stand still, both literally, but energetically, when there's such a push to do more, the to-do list that goes on for days that's never going to get done anyway? How do we ease into that and say, okay, to cultivate our ability to use our energies, our wise effort in the service of standing still? And there can be an aversion to it when the mind is spinning. You know, that I often share what John Travis, a friend and colleague at another spirit rock teacher, said, that you know, we take our seats and watch the theater of the mind. And sometimes it's like, ooh, that is the last movie I want to watch, is the theater of, as the, you know, the movie of my mind. Because why? There's, the thoughts can be all over the place is one reason. There are others. But this real gift of being able to play with, I use that word intentionally, to play with what's it like if we gather the mind together so that it's steadier, that clearing in the dense forest of our minds is available to us as a place to rest, as a place to come home to, as a place to belong. From David Wise, The House of Belonging. I awoke this morning in the gold light, turning this way and that, thinking for a moment it was one day like any other. But the veil had gone from my darkened heart, and I thought, this must have been the quiet candlelight that filled my room. It must have been the first easy rhythm with which I breathed myself to sleep. It must have been the prayer, I said, speaking to the otherness of the night. And I thought, this is a good day. This is the day you could meet your love. This is the black day someone close to you could die. This is the day you realize how easily the thread is broken between this world and the next. And I found myself sitting up in the quiet pathway of light, the tawny, close-grained cedar burning round me like fire, and all the angels of this housely heaven ascending through the first roof of light the sun had made. This is my bright home in which I live. This is where I ask my friends to come. This is where I want to love all the things it has taken me so long to learn to love. This is the temple of my adult aloneness, and I belong to that aloneness as I belong to my life. There is no house like the house of belonging. Let that phrase kind of echo. There is no house like the house of belonging. The temple of my aloneness is where I belong. To this conditioned habit we have of feeling like we don't belong. We don't belong in our family of origin. We don't belong in our communities, or in whatever way we can play that out. Can we take refuge in the adult, the temple of our adult aloneness? This is where I belong. And how do we maintain the temple such that it is somewhere we want to belong? So I ask you to close your eyes. In a playful way, what is the image that may come of your ideal temple of your adult aloneness? And this is distinct from our adult loneliness. That's another talk. But if we allow ourselves to feel into the rich fullness of our heart, our wisdom, the fullness of the essence of who we are, not the small personality self, but from that place of the radiant heart, the still quiet mind, that temple of your adult aloneness that is deeply connected to the world, the nature around you. What's that temple look like? And to really open up to the creativity of how you might create that temple, that home that is yours for this lifetime, regardless of the external circumstances. Again, just allowing the mind to see what image comes on this day. You can always alter it later. Of this beautiful, serene, calm temple of your adult aloneness, this temple to which you belong. You may invite your friends to come to. And as you allow yourself to inhabit the center of this temple, to look around, does anything, any cobwebs, any piles of stuff that needs to be Marie Kondo'd away, to be able to clear away that which interrupts the serenity and beauty of this temple? And by this, I'm asking, can we reflect upon the typical habit patterns of the mind? What are the stories we tell ourselves, about our loved ones, about our exes, about our jobs, about the fate of the world, about our childhood, our parents? Are those thoughts skillful? Are they serving us? How loud? What is the mess that has been created by the chorus of the Sangha of Hungry Ghosts? Can you imagine the metaphorical broom that could sweep away the detritus and debris left by that Sangha of Hungry Ghosts, such that that clearing is there? That the space is just as you would like it to be, such that it is as soothing and calm as possible. That this adult temple of your aloneness is a place of belonging, a place of refuge, that a mind that is unified and steady and calm is needed. How can we offer this to ourselves, make this temple known and available such that it is a place for us to go, to work with the mind that can create our sense of homelessness, right? That David, John O'Donohue's line, our body knows it belongs. It's our minds that make us so homeless. It's our minds that tell us, sweetheart, you don't belong, really. It's one of the many lies we can tell ourselves about our experience here on this earth as animal bodies. Of course we belong. Can we give ourselves the gift of taking refuge in this house of belonging by learning to cultivate skillful means of the mind?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.